Does anybody know which parsha it is this week?
Yes, less word than your
Jesus. No, anybody?
Two.
Two more, good.
It's
good, you know what parsha it is. So, yeah, can you tell me one of the Kalim in this week's parsha? Any of them?
Go.
Anybody? Avi? Can you tell me one of the Kalim in this week's parsha? Good? Not bad?
So bad.
There you go. Those are the halakim. Truma. So let's take a look for a moment at the way the Torah describes the Menorah. The Menorah was the most difficult of all the Kalim. Sorry, not quite there yet. You'll see some Menorah Zav Torah. Make sure they all summoner. So make sure Rashi explains what? Anybody? You take one chunk of gold, and then you have to shape it out of this one chunk. You can't take different pieces and then solder it together. Yirechol, v'konol, gibiel, kafterel, frochel, mimena yiyu. So there's all these different ornate details to it. It's got these like goblet-like carvings around it. It has in the pictures that they have of the menorah, so it looks usually like a ball or an apple, and then it has the flowers. The kids are, it was very ornate, very exquisite. And the truth is that, especially if you're an interior designer, which I'm not, but if you've dealt with interior design, so you could really appreciate a parsha like this. Most of us probably have a little bit of a difficulty because it's very detailed and it's exceedingly detailed. And there's a lot of detail. But if you're an interior designer, that's what it's all about. You know, anybody who's ever renovated their home, so even if they're not an interior designer, all of a sudden every single little detail becomes important. Right? What light fixture you're going to put over there, what color your backsplash in the kitchen is going to be, and it has to, of course, have some type of contrast to the cabinetry. How the lighting is going to fall on the walls, on the surrounding area, your furniture, the paint, everything from A to Z, your tiles, the grout in between the tiles. Yeah, I know you guys, the shibutzim. Yeah, your parents didn't take time deciding, okay, first we have to decide the tiles, right? Do we want mavrik? Do we want mat? Do we want something which has like more marble look to it? Maybe a more natural look to it? Maybe a rustic look? And then the grout, I have to decide which grout I want, even though it's all going to turn black in the end. Right? Eventually, all grout becomes black. But
in the kitchen, they designed a way that pools right outside and the sun reflects, and the whole kitchen's white.
Yeah.
The sunlight rays shine on the pool, and
so there you go.
Moves around the kitchen.
So there you go. You got it.
Yeah, that's really
so. All of a sudden, you know, when a person is involved in this type of thing, all, literally every single little nitty-gritty, tiny detail becomes important. My father, who's a little bit in the construction business, he explained it to me once. He said, it's because you have to live with it. So if it's an office building or a shopping center, you don't really care as much, but something you have to live with, so that matters more. So this is something, you know, you're struck by it. The Kalim, the Mishkan itself, the Big Dekun, there's so much attention to the details of making everything just perfectly beautiful, exquisite, ornate, intricate. It really is amazing. And, you know, as thinking people, we should wonder what's, like, why, what. So obviously, there's the idea of Kavod Shamayim. Kavod Shamayim, it's glorious for God that His house, so to speak, should be beautiful. But I wanted to add another dimension. Chaval, I didn't bring it upstairs. Is there a Gemara Brachos over there? That Gemara underneath, is that a Brachos? No. No, that won't happen. It's a Rabbeinu Yoino. In any event, there's a Gemara in Brachos, which is... No, it's alright. There's a Gemara in Brachos, which is Nifsak LaHalacha, as most Gemaras are. So we're getting a little bit of Halacha today also. There's a Gemara in Brachos that says that when you're leaving Shul, you should not take Apsia Gasa. You shouldn't walk with broad, wide strides. Why not? What's the problem with taking broad strides when you're leaving a Shul? So Rabbi Yair, when you're leaving shul, when you're leaving shul, you shouldn't walk quickly or take broad, wide strides. So why not? Milt, can you give me a reason? Anybody?
Zilzil.
How's it a zilzil? Good.
That's a guide
that you're running away from shul.
Okay, so what's the problem with that?
Running away from shul?
Yeah, what's the problem with that? Speak it out.
Like, you should, it's not covered. You're running away from something that presents a good bar.
Okay.
But what if you're doing it to war?
Like, if you're speaking to a king or like a king's palace?
No, we're talking now about when you're leaving shul.
Oh, but you're allowed to take wide strides.
Yeah, you're supposed to run to shul. That's the Gemara says you're supposed to run to shul.
Like weird, right, wide strides.
Oh, meaning you shouldn't look weird?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a different issue. You know, that it's a mitzvah to be normal. I'm not talking about that right now.
It's a mitzvah to be normal?
Yeah, it's a mitzvah to be normal.
Really?
For sure. Absolutely. But that's not our discussion for today. In any event. You're going to change your whole levush. Okay, in any event. Says Rabbi Yehuda, along the lines of what you said, just he really speaks it out on a stage. And he says like this, when a person runs away from something, or he walks briskly with broad strides, what it basically is conveying is that I was just in a situation that I found burdensome, bothersome, and now I'm on my way to getting to where I'm going to be relaxed, comfortable, feeling nice, pleasant. Says Rabbi Yehuda, it's supposed to be just the opposite. A shul, says Rabbi Yehuda, a base kinesis is a base tefillah, which he says is a makom menucha. It's a place where you're relaxed, you're at ease with yourself. V'yesh lismayach b'yeshivas hasham, and a person should be happy while he's there. And then he brings the Gemara. There's a pasuk first that says, "Kiloy basim ad ata el hamenucha ve'el hanachalo." When the Torah describes in the midbar the bringing of the karbanos, it says, "You have not yet come to the menucha and the nachalo, to the place of rest and the place of your inheritance." Nachalo is very similar, you know. When a person, it's like, you know, I was at a Chanukah Habayis. You guys know Shlomi Aaron? He used to work in Chip. Now he works in the Gel Center. He's the main gabbai of Rabbi Margolis is Shri. Shari Tzvima. No, not Shabzi. Shlomi.
He owns everything?
He doesn't own it. He doesn't own it.
He's a partner?
I don't think so.
Is it like a big scam?
Mm-mm. No, that's not him. He was just a worker.
Yeah.
Clerk. Actually, when that happened, I had a lot of money there for my kollel, like tens of thousands of dollars, and they called me up to quickly get it. It was like a whole big whatever thing. Yeah, Baruch Hashem, I didn't lose any money. There were people that lost a lot of money.
I heard like hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. Well, there were individuals that lost hundreds of thousands, so probably the total was maybe up to a million or more.
Wow. Like no one lost a couple of million.
The guy who owned Chifley changed, went belly up, and went bankrupt. Anyway.
My dad lost a lot of money, so...
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, coming back, I was at Shlomi Aaron had a Chanukah Sabbais. He and his wife, they bought an apartment on Rivivim, and at the Chanukah
Sabbais.
Shlomi.
Right. So that's my dad's friend. Actually,
do
check. Right. So it's the.
Okay. So he spoke at his Chanukah Sabbais, and he said a very profound. He said it in his signature simple way, but it's a very profound idea. He said that at this point he felt like he finally had his Yerusha, so to speak, in Eretz Yisrael. He said, because until this point, you know, you're renting, you don't really feel kavua. You never know, the baldir is going to kick you out because he sells it all of a sudden, you have to go from one rental to the next. So once you buy your own place, then you really feel at home. You really feel like you've gotten there. So the concept of nachalo, of an inheritance, is very much intertwined with the concept of menucha. You feel like you've found your place. You know, this is where you belong. This is where you could stay. So Chazal say, what's menucha? Menucha zayshiloi. That's referring to when the Mishkan was in the city of Shiloh in Eretz Yisrael. Nachalo, what's Nachalo? Zoi, Yerushalayim. That's referring to the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Says Abinu Yaino, so you see from here that the makom of the avodah of the karbonis and tefillah, don't forget, ki beisi beis tefillah yikarei v'chol ha'amim, that the Beis HaMikdash is not karbonis, right, is meant to go along with tefillah. As a matter of fact, in the bracha of Ritzei in Shmoneh Esrei, how do we say it? V'hoshein es ha'avodah lidvir b'tefillah, the Isha Yisrael who tefillasam be'ahavas kamu baratzim. This all machlokes in the Mefarshim where to put the kamu. But one thing is clear: the concept of avodah and tefillah goes hand in hand. Tefillah we know is b'makom avodah. So says Ibn Yoyna, we see from Chazal that the makom of avodah of karbanos and tefillah is meant to be a makom of menucha, a makom where you feel like you feel at home here. It's kishmak to be here. I like being here. So that's why to walk away quickly with broad strides, which indicates the opposite, is no good. So I would like to suggest, I don't know if it's too novel of a concept to suggest, I don't think so. I'd like to suggest that's one facet, one dimension at least, of why the Torah makes such a big deal that the Mishkan should be so drop dead gorgeous. I mean, a guy walks in there, wow. I mean, it's like, to the talk about details. You walk in, you see these beautiful tapestries that are the roof, and then there are these not turquoise, but techeles colored loops, and there's golden hooks in the loops. The Gemara says that when you would look up, it felt like you were looking at the stars in the Rakia. You know, it was like a starry, beautiful night. And just every single thing about the Mishkan was clearly engineered to have the maximum wow effect. Now, when you walk into a place and you look around, you're like, wow, it's a nice place. So what's the feeling that you get? What's the tchusha that you have? I like it here. It's kishmak to be here. I like being inside this place. This is a nice place to be. So it totally changes. Whereas if you walk into a place and the paint is like peeling all off all the walls, you know, and the light fixtures are like, you know, it looks like they're about to fall on your head because, you know, who knows since the last time the electrician, they're hanging by the electrical wires, you know, they're not even fixed into the ceiling. And the glass is broken and the floor is dirty and it smells and it's cold. You know, one time I was in a particular Beis Medrash on Shabbos afternoon, and it was after Mincha Gedolah. And I was trying to sit down and learn for a bit, and there was like not no one there. And it always bothered me. There was a minyan at Mincha Gedolah. As a matter of fact, there were probably enough people to make three minyans at Mincha Gedolah on Shabbos. So why are they all rushing to go home so quick? You can't sit down for a few minutes and learn? And then I realized, I myself was in a significant amount of discomfort. The benches were hard. I mean, real, you know, those just hard wooden benches. The lights were off. Okay, it was the middle of the afternoon, so there's enough ambient light coming in from outside, but it was the winter, so it was gray. And it was cold. So I'm like, it's dark, it's hard, and it's cold. No wonder people don't feel a cheshik to stay here. So I think, you know, as a Musar Haskil, which most of us are not really in a position to be the ones to do this, but certainly when it comes to a shul Beis Medrash, there should be an eye for that gishmak factor. When a person is building a Beis Medrash, designing a Beis Medrash, outfitting a Beis Medrash or a shul, it should really be with a sense of how can we make people really enjoy being in this place?
We studied in, well, not really studying, there was a psychology class and they told us that you know, if there's too much comfort, then you stop focusing.
That's true. If you're sitting in a recliner, yeah, right? Well, you know, like the Bob Fosse, kick Batman's recliner when he's the Sith and the Yomi, he'll be asleep in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
For sure. No question. You don't want to overdo it, because then a person will be too comfortable, it's too warm. So, but, Ladugma, the difference between sitting on this padded chair and a hard wooden bench for me, personally, makes a humongous difference in my ability to sit for hours at a time, concentrate, and feel good about what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And when I leave, I want to come back for more. I like it, right? But I would like to suggest that this really is a concept that's not relegated only to shul. You know, we're not a Sunday religion. We're not even a Saturday religion. Yiddishkeit, Judaism, is something which is life. It's life. And this idea that we're supposed to have an eye for aesthetics and beauty, pleasure, enjoyment, geschmack, should really, you know, go throughout all of our Yiddishkeit. So I'll give a little example. You know, you have your little six-year-old Benny, and you're going to buy him his first pair of tzitzis. Big. Okay? You're going to buy him his first pair of tzitzis. Bring him to the store. Let him feel the wool. Let him feel cotton. Let him feel those ones that have, you know, the mesh work. And ask him, which one do you like the best? Which one feels the nicest to you? Right? Do you like the thicker strings? The thinner strings? How do you like it? Do you like the one that has the button over there? You know what difference it's going to make to him? If you just buy him whichever one you think is the best, you know, maybe, you know, especially if it's the mother doing it, she might decide, okay, which one is the easiest to launder? Which, don't get me wrong, that's also important for her. But as far as the kid is concerned, bear in mind that if he doesn't really enjoy wearing it, if it's wool, let's say, and he doesn't like it that it's a scratchy feeling, well, you know, what type of feeling is he going to grow up with for this mitzvah of tzitzis? Let's say you're of the persuasion that makes bat mitzvah parties. Okay? Let's say it's America, so it's catered. Okay? Maybe over here. There's also some catered events, bat mitzvah parties. So you're gonna order the menu, okay? So most people, I would imagine, it wouldn't even occur to them to ask their daughter, what would you like on the menu? A lot of people, unfortunately, these types of events are an issue of, let's call it spade a spade, impressing the guests. Now, it could be that if you ask her what she would like on the menu, she's going to choose, you know, chicken fingers, french fries, and I don't know what else. And
Ben and Jerry's chocolate
or whatever it is, right? And meanwhile, the mother, who's like a classy lady, her eyes are rolling, and she's just imagining what it's going to be like at this event when she's going to be turning numerous shades of red when all of her guests show up. But step back for a minute and ask yourself, what is a bat mitzvah about? What's the point? What's the whole point of making this party?
Yeah.
The idea.
Then you'll realize it's no point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Fine. But if we're working with a paradigm where people are doing it, then it's not a bad idea to ask yourself, what am I trying to accomplish? Am I not trying to accomplish that this party should be like the inaugural entering of this Jewish girl into her adult status as a committed Jew? You want her to feel good feelings for her Judaism, her Jewish heritage. So, if you've got that in mind, so ask her, what does she want? It'll be much more pleasant for her. You know, sometimes at bar mitzvahs or bat mitzvahs, you know, you could see the kid is just like, you know, it's like, almost like the Queen of England, you know, just like has to stand there and wait. You know, just look good. Just stand there and look good. Don't do anything. Right? Smile for the camera. Cheese, right? And that's it. Beyond that, just don't breathe. Okay? He's like the little centerpiece. And the truth is that it's not just for children. It's for a person himself also. You know, sometimes a person might, coming back to shuls. You know, some people like davening where there's a lot of singing. Some people don't like it. Some people like it when the rav says a long drasha. Some people, well, I don't know how many people like that. But some people like it when there's a short drasha or no drasha. Or some people like it when there's a kiddush. Now, again, I'm not saying that Yiddishkeit should be all about, okay, how can I get the most ephemeral pleasure out of it? But taking what you're doing and making it a pleasant experience goes a long way to casting a lot of that, you know, brilliant menorah light on what you're doing, so that you really feel connected to your Yiddishkeit and connected to the Ribbono Shel Olam who engineered it. Okay, let's go.